we're going to take a break from the show to feature a new segment that discusses an often overlooked aspect of the business. I'm speaking about creating a family-friendly environment inside the restaurant industry. With help from our friends at Family Forward NC, which is a program of the North Carolina Early Childhood Foundation, a nonprofit that works to support children and their families across the state, we're going to discuss ideas, resources, and testimonials from those that work within the company, as well as actual restaurant owners that have implemented family-friendly practices while working with Family Forward NC. Welcome back to the show, former guest, co-owner of Chef and the Farmer and Benny's Big Time, also father in the industry, our good pal, Ben Knight.
Well, also you didn't mention, and I'm sure Ben's probably tired of hearing this, but Vivian Howard's arm candy.
That's a good way of putting it.
I mean, that's what I hear you refer to, at least.
Oh, good, so. Good. Candy's a good, I guess, a good reference point, huh?
Ben, you and Vivian have two children, and you are very much a family. Mm-hmm. Tell us, why was it important for you to incorporate family-friendly workplace practices at the restaurants that you co-own?
Well, families are the cornerstone of the community to begin with. And so restaurants are gathering places for families. And, you know, for so long, the irony is that they've been a miserable place to work for people who have a lot of family obligations.
Yeah.
And, you know, we feel like and have modeled our whole company culture after the idea that a happy team makes happy food, makes happy guests. We want our team to be happy and to feel like they're supported work for their lives outside of work. It's created a tremendous amount of goodwill with our team.
What's something in particular that you've done to implement these processes at your restaurants?
The first thing we did was we were early adopters of health insurance for our team. It was a huge priority of mine. But more than that, we wanted people to adopt the usage. A lot of restaurant groups will offer it, but not provide the support needed for, you know, their team to sign and utilize it or provide the financing for that. So, you know, early on, we supported 75% of the premiums for the HSA. And that allowed a lot of folks that had never had insurance to get on that. We had a woman 2 years ago who was working with us. And she was in her 40s. And this was the first job she had had. And she'd worked in restaurants off and on and other places that had insurance. And she was diagnosed with stage 4 stomach cancer. You know, this was the first time in her life she had had health insurance. Thank God. It gave her so much hope. And unfortunately, she passed away several months after the diagnosis. But, you know, her husband was able to not go bankrupt as a result of having the insurance. And everyone was just thankful that she could get treatment that she needed. You know, as we move forward, that's a huge aspect that we need to keep the pressure on all of our representatives and people in the industry who have been dogging and sidestepping that for a long time.
Well, I appreciate you sharing those stories with us and giving us your time today. This is an interesting time for the food and beverage industry, but it is good to know that we're building plans and creating a stronger infrastructure for the future. And with people like yourself, your wife, putting it all together, we appreciate it.
Yeah, thank man.
All right, thanks a lot,
thanks
Ben.
For having
appreciate
me. Good to see you guys.
Family Forward NC is an innovative initiative of the North Carolina Early Childhood Foundation. Family Forward NC can provide your company with resources and support to help you implement practices like paid leave, flexible work and scheduling, health benefits and flexible spending accounts, child care support, and more. For more information, please visit familyforwardnc.com. Business smart, family friendly, future ready.
You are listening to the North Carolina Food and Beverage Podcast. Thank you for downloading and subscribing. Coming to you virtually live from high atop the historic Raleigh building in beautiful downtown Raleigh. The NCF&B takes the listener behind the scenes to tell the stories of the people that contribute to the creation of the food and beverage community of North Carolina. And now, the misfits in the dish pit, the faces of the front. They are Max Trujillo and Matthew Weiss.
Well, hello, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Food and Beverage Podcast. I am your co-host, Max Trujillo.
And I am your co-host, Matthew Weiss. And we are here in Wilkes County, and we're at the Call Family Distillery with Brian Call, the seventh generation distiller of his family's distillery.
Welcome. Yeah, glad to have y'all here this morning. We'll walk around and look at some of these moonshine cars and talk whiskey and moonshine and a little bit about apple brandy we make here.
Yeah. That sounds great to us. Yeah, so we're, instead of sitting behind a desk or so, we're going to take this show on the road through the distillery and walk around. We are now inside, I guess it's like a garage if you want to call it, but a huge room that has three beautiful vehicles. Tell us what we're looking at.
Yeah, we're looking at a 66 Dodge Coronet. This was one of my dad's original moonshine hauling cars. He used to run all through the state, and years ago they would soup up the suspension in these cars, and talking to my dad growing up, they'd put about 120 gallons of moonshine in the trunk, and he'd deliver it to drink houses in Winston, Burlington, Charlotte area. And he used to tell me he wasn't ever hauling no liquor till about 11 o'clock at night, and he'd haul it about daylight. And that way, if they ever met anybody on the road, as usual, a revenuer or another moonshiner, back in the 60s, taking the load out.
Mm-hmm. These cars were developed because they needed to be fast.
Yeah.
They needed size. They needed some space. Yep. Because what you were doing at the time, let's be honest, you were running.
You were
bootlegging.
It was illegal.
You were running liquor, and this is kind of essentially too like how NASCAR got started.
Yeah.
Effectively, is we needed some big fast cars that could move around, and that's what we're looking at is some of the original vehicles that were used to originally run the bootlegging. Of moonshine.
Yeah, years ago, the moonshiners, they had reputations who had the fastest cars, and they'd get out and race each other, and they figured out, people would pay money to come see them race. So that's kind of how NASCAR got started, watching.
And you didn't even have to have booze in your trunk for that one.
Nope.
Right? Yeah, but no wonder they souped up the engines, because to carry 120 gallons of liquid plus the weight of the glass, or whatever they're putting it in, you got to haul that.
Yeah, my dad, they'd put all kinds of switches, that, like on the Chrysler here, it's got the original toggle switches they put on. If the revenuers jumped them at night, they could turn off their brake lights and running lights behind him, and that was a pretty neat little option.
Now, yeah. I'm no gearhead, but I know what a 426 Hemi is, and that's got to be pumping out, 600 horsepower?
Yeah, that thing around first gear would run 70 mile an hour. And I never could get down second. We'd be going over 120, and you still had two to go.
Wow. So,
what I always love to hear about with a Hemi is these things, they take a nice sip.
Yeah.
They're 7 miles to the gallon?
Yeah, it ain't much, that's for sure.
But this is like American muscle at its purest form.
Yeah, some of the guys, my dad used to put a $100 bill on the dash, and he'd take off, and he told them if they could get that $100 bill, he'd give it to them. But
it's impossible.
He never lost it.
Yeah, it'd the force you, of the car is so sure. massive.
Now this is a 61 New Yorker he used to haul in. This was his favorite liquor car. He'd put a nice sports coat on and a Stetson hat, and they thought he was a judge or a lawyer, somebody important, back in the 60s, and kind of run under the radar. But
this thing can haul ass, too.
Yeah, it's got a cross ram 413, got the two four barrels on each fender. It's this was their go-to liquor car in 61 till the Hemis come out.
Mm.
I guess having a van or something that was more of like a big would be a little too deliberate and too obvious,
too
right?
Conspicuous.
Too conspicuous.
Yeah, back in the 50s and 60s, they had like 40 some revenue agents in Wilkes County, the moonshine capital of the world, and them guys, they'd get out. They knowed it took a lot of water to make whiskey, and they'd walk creeks and they'd find stills. I talked to one guy. he was our plane pilot, and he said the first day on the job in Wilkes County, flying around looking for stills, they caught 26 illegal distilleries in Wilkes County in one day.
Oh, 26 in one day, and that's just the ones they caught.
Yeah.
So. Wow. Well, you know, it's interesting too. And Thomas, you know, to frame it again, we have Thomas Sally here, who's working with Wilkes, Wilkes County, or Wilkesboro, as I should say, works for the city of Wilkesboro. We were talking about the economy, essentially, of alcohol, and how, in many ways, it was like used for trade, conversed to actual American money, like funds. It's like, no, we're making this to be independent and to not have this crazy overtaxation that was happening, because not it wasn't just your standard taxes that everybody else was paying. There was also the excise tax,
and yeah.
Essentially not too different than it is right now with MXB taxing on top of the regular bottles. So distillers, many times, if you're creating a product, you're going to market, you're doing something, you pay your fair share, quote unquote, whatever that is. But the distillers felt that it was not fair. The additional taxation that was happening was keeping them from feeling like they could play in the same market everywhere. So thus it turned kind of to an underground industry.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, my dad, he told me he could work in the factory 3 months, or he could make more Holland moonshine in 1 week than he could work in 3 months.
Right.
So that was a no-brainer for him. He was.
And like back then, when you were just when one purchased moonshine, was it used straight the way it was, or was that used as a vehicle to then create other drinks and beverages? Like, how was the application of drinking moonshine back then?
Yeah, they'd take it to drink houses, and they might have a certain mixture they'd mix with their drink, you know, to calm it down a little bit. My dad, he always delivered 101 proof liquor, because. Yeah. He said if it didn't have a good bead on it, they'd shake the jar, you know, the alcohol come in, and if it didn't bead, they wouldn't take it. They always wanted the high proof stuff.
Oh, right. Okay, so if you're shaking it, it doesn't bubble up?
Yeah, it's got a bead like a size of fish eyes on it, and if you shake it and it don't have no bead at all, you know it's weak liquor. They always wanted the high proof liquor, and, you know, the drink houses, if they wanted to cut it, they'd cut it theirself.
Right.
Make more money.
Yeah, and I imagine some people probably maybe aged it, or if they had their own barrels. And
yeah, I mean, if you're getting
turned it into their own proprietary whiskey, quote-unquote, or bourbon.
Yeah, but you're getting, like, cask-strength product, effectively. Yeah.
You're getting white whiskey.
Yeah.
That's what you're getting. And sometimes they would age some whiskey in barrels and what they called charred. And Dad told me a lot of, like, lawyers and stuff, they like the charred moonshine whiskey.
Okay. Probably reminded them more of scotch.
And apple and peach brandy, or lawyers and people like that enjoyed that type of product. So around Christmas time, they'd always, you know, get apples and peaches when the harvest was in, and they'd make that up. And at Christmas time, they could really sell, you know, a lot of the brandies.
And I noticed today you're still making an apple brandy.
Yeah, we do an apple and peach brandy that's grown here in the Brushy Mountains local.
Okay. The peaches, too?
Yep, peaches.
Yeah, I don't think I knew the peaches grew
in the brushes.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's a good point to, move the story forward and tell us a little bit about how, at what point did it become, did you guys, you know, get a distiller's license and the whole thing?
Around 2015, we applied for a license. Our logo, the lightning bolt crossing, we tell everybody that's illegal gone legal, so...
Right. I mean, let's just call it out right now. The 2015 is when you guys decided to do this straight out.
Yeah, straight out.
So before that, in 2014...
Well, my dad passed away, like, right before this happened.
Okay.
And, you know, he is always, you know, when he is in the illegal business, you know, you worry a lot about getting in trouble, going to jail. And I created my own ethanol plant years ago and kind of run that and fell in love with making alcohol, and I just kind of went from that over to the legal side of making moonshine and whiskey. But everything Dad done was illegal.
Was there any time where there wasn't distillation going on then? Where there wasn't a distillery that you guys had?
Well, with making, you know, ethanol, then And then I had another distillery. They wanted me to come work for them for a while. I'd done that for 5 years. Sold out to them and started our own distillery.
Okay. Yeah. So were you making the ethanol here?
No,
it was a separate facility.
It was a separate place on the cow farm where I live, where we had just for tractors and stuff. We started out making ethanol. But Dad, he always, you know, made illegal booze, and my grandpa and the Reverend Call, seven generations, they had a legal distillery over in Lois, which is right beside Lynchburg, Tennessee.
Oh, okay.
So
we've heard
I tell
that.
Everybody he was legal then I'm legal now, seven generations.
So when you go back seven, what time frame are we talking about? What was the established year?
Around the 1800s, around in there.
Yeah. Okay. So it's, yeah, we're going way back. Like right when America was kind of first getting settled.
We make sour mash whiskey here, and that's exactly. I always wondered why my dad taught me how to make sour mash whiskey, and we finally, you know, traced it back all the way to the Reverend Dan. That's what they was doing over in Lynchburg, making sour mash. And we filter our whiskey through sugar maple here, just the same way Grandpa done seven generations ago.
Okay. Because in Lynchburg, they do the charcoal mellowing.
Yeah, with sugar maple. They call it the Lincoln County process.
Right. And so is this sugar maple is the same?
Yeah, same. We're going to do it the same way they do. Filter through sugar maple.
So you're kind of dancing around the topic here, but if you want to explain to them your connection to the other distillery in Lynchburg.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a grandpa seven generations ago. He was a Lutheran minister, and beside, you know, he was the minister, and he had a merchant store, and out behind the merchant store he made sour mash whiskey. And they sold it for medicine, you know, back in the 1800s through the store. At age seven, Jack Daniel's mama died, and his dad got remarried, and him and his stepmom didn't get along good, so he come to live with Murray, Jane, and Dan on the Call Farm.
Really?
Yep. And he started working at the store, and he kept having an interest in wanting to help the Reverend make whiskey. So later on, they formed a distillery together. It was the Daniel and Call Distillery, District 4, Number 7. And we got the paperwork on
that's
it up front. Yeah.
That's why it's Jack Daniel's is the old Number 7.
Yeah.
And made with sour mash.
Yeah, how he knows how to make sour mash.
Yeah. We believe the government come around about that time, and the congregation told the Reverend, if you're going to keep making booze, you know, you're going to have to step down as our pastor. So he chose the Lord's work and sold out to Jack Daniel's. And about that time, the government come around and they changed the distillery numbers, went from District 4 to Number 7 to District 5, Number 16. And what we've read and been told that his whiskey wouldn't sell that good because there's always the public know the old Number 7, and that's why we think that's where it come from.
So interesting. And it's great too to know that like all these like stories were like started in North Carolina. Like think like Tennessee whiskey and all that. It's like, but it eventually became Tennessee whiskey. It started in North Carolina.
Yeah.
We're in the garage or what's.
Yeah, this is here where we display the cars, and that's one of my grandpa's 600 gallon copper pot stills he had back in the 40s, 30s, in that era.
I mean, that looks like it's been used quite heavily over
the
years.
The revenuers chopped it up, and we beat it back out and put it on display here.
Oh, really? Like they came in, shut you down, broke it down?
Yeah, my grandpa back in the 30s.
And so talking about a little bit like specifically with the products, like we're looking over here and you have your bottling line or your labeling line.
Yeah.
The label that we're looking at is The Uncatchable. Willie Clay Calls The Uncatchable, obviously named because he never was caught, essentially.
Yeah, the revenuers nicknamed him that, The Uncatchable. He went to prison one time. They got him on a conspiracy, but he never was caught at the still or in a car hauling whiskey. So.
It feels like liberating to talk about this stuff out in the open, you know, but it feels cool because these are stories that people, this is always like you hear about it from somebody else.
Right.
Like, I heard that like my uncle used to do this or whatever, but this is where it happened. Like, this is like people were making their own shine, their own whiskey, throwing it in the back of a truck, driving it around, distributing it for seven generations. Like, and this just became legal a legitimate business, quote unquote. Basically, you just started paying taxes on it.
Yeah,
five years ago.
Yeah, the government wants their taxes. That's for sure.
So,
it was always legal if they paid their taxes. You know, it was just,
right. Yeah,
back then they liked that cash money and.
And you like your freedom, so
I don't have to look over my shoulder now like my pop did and grandpa.
Yeah, it's a little bit easier in that sense.
Yeah.
Well, do you want to show us then where the magic happens?
Yeah. Get back here in the back.
Yeah. We're walking by a car. This, I'm guessing, is from the 30s.
1940
coupe. White Lightning license plate. Yeah. A Ford coupe. This is beautiful. This looks like, to the listener, this is like what ZZ Top was driving around.
Yeah. If you think of moonshine, this era, back in the 40s, this is the car to go to. That's what everybody had, the 40 coupe.
And it's great. It's got we're looking at the back of the trunk is open, and there are Kerr. Actually, is it pronounced Carr? Am I saying this?
I say Kerr.
You say Kerr. Because it was Carr Drugs, which was a long-time North Carolina pharmacy that was around for a while. And then finally, I think CVS or Walgreens bought them out. But someone told me that K-E-R-R in North Carolinian is pronounced Carr.
Carr.
But Carr, regular mason jars, a box of them. And these were clearly filled with all the shine.
Yeah, they're half-gallon. Jars.
Half gallon jars filled in there.
And just here's what they called a wooden jacket can. When it's out in the woods making liquor, they'd fill these up and carry the cans in, then they'd proof it up in a smokehouse or something, you know. But they put this wood around them because they made a lot of racket when they clung together. So they'd put the wood around them when they'd bring them in where they wouldn't make no racket.
Now, what would a half gallon of shine run you? Back then, do you remember? Like, I mean, obviously, back then there's seven generations, so we got to pick an era. But say the era that's right here in like 1940, if someone was going to buy a half gallon of this, what do you suppose it would have cost?
I'm just guessing, but I'd say probably a dollar or so.
Yeah,
50 cents, a dollar back in the 40s, or that might be too much.
Sure.
I know in the 60s when my dad, they would get. $25-$30 for 6 gallons of illegal whiskey.
It makes me feel like, Matt, we're doing this show like in like 5 more years, we're going to be going to like some pot warehouse after it's like legal federally and statewide.
It's going to be a lot more expensive.
They're going to be like, yeah, we've been doing this for 7 generations. Totally. It's just now we're able to talk about it and tell people what we do.
Yeah, that's for sure, man. That's a long time of making whiskey and moonshine, you know, 7 generations.
Yeah, and
I was just lucky to get to work with my dad some when I was little, you know, making brandy. He showed me how to do that, and got to work with him on the mash bill, setting mash back. And
what would he tell people who asked him about his business? What would he say that he did?
Well, he is a farmer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He liked to farm, but he was real tight-lipped. He didn't.
Yeah, but he was a farmer though. I mean,
we raised cattle and beef cattle, Angus.
Yeah.
Okay. And did you have corn out there as well that was the original of why you started distilling?
Yeah, we use a white corn meal that we get from a local miller. He's still in operation, Lenny's Mill. They do a white corn.
Okay.
That's what we make everything here with, white corn meal.
So it's 100% corn.
Yeah. There's a picture of it on the wall. The old mill, it's old water mill.
Oh, wow.
When he opens that gate, the whole building vibrates down there.
Lenny's
turning
Watermill
that.
Union.
Lenny's Watermill Union Grove.
This room here is our deionized water. To make good liquor, you got to have good water, so we run it through there to do all of our proofing down with.
Okay.
That reminds me of a different, Thomas, you mentioned this, that there's that you have excellent water here. And I have to say, last night, we were in our cabins, and I was like, I forgot to get water. I was like, well, Thomas said there's good water. It was really good water in the tap.
Yeah. I think that, you know, the limestone, Nico was talking about quartz. I mean, all the minerals in this area just kind of act as a natural filter. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Coming straight out of the mountain. And we're getting it at the source because the foothills and the mountains is kind of where these.
Right. So it doesn't have to travel far.
Yeah.
It'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, they go out in the woods and find a real good spring with a lot of water in it. That's how they do their, you know, cool their condensers when they was making moonshine. My dad, we'd built some for display. They'd go to the head of the spring, build like a wooden trough down to the condenser, and that let that cold water run over your copper coils, and the alcohol vapors would go in and turn into liquid and come out.
There you go.
We're doing a run now of moonshine. You can see him blowing the sour mash back in the. That's where all the steam's coming up from.
Oh wow! Oh, so we're you're making it right now.
Yeah.
And one of those gentlemen is the eighth generation. Your son?
Yeah, that's my son in the Carhartt jacket. He just graduated from Western Carolina, marketing degree, and I'm learning him everything from the ground up. So I thought.
It looks like you guys had an idea how to market yourself. I mean, like the Museum of Cars, you see the logo. You guys had a good idea.
Yeah, you got merch in the front. You guys, you've got a bar that you can sit out and taste. I mean, this is really great. You walk in, this is a well-designed and, you know, it's a focused business. This isn't just running it out of grandpa's trunk anymore.
You have heavy-duty machinery and, like, equipment and everything now.
How does your son feel about being like the first legitimate distiller now? Like he's like he never got to do the illegal stuff.
Yeah, he likes doing it. It's a lot of work, you know. If that mash is ready to run Sunday, Monday, you got to run it, you know, whenever it's ready. And it's I know it just gets in your blood. I love it. I never could get enough of it, you know. I just
You said your father passed before you guys went?
Yeah. I tell everybody it probably wouldn't work if Dad would have been living. He'd been wanting to load the Chrysler up. And go
I was
down
thinking,
the
I'm like, was that convenient or was that intentional?
Yeah.
That, like, he's like, not while I'm alive are we going to do it this way.
No, he was headstrong, you know. He'd done it for years his way.
Let's talk about family for a second. Your wife runs the business with you. She's out, and you guys are opening up a bar in what I guess was used to be your tasting room. But I'm wondering, I have sons, and so you said your son likes it. Did you have to do any convincing, or was that did he just want to come back and work with you guys?
Yeah, after 4 years over at Western, we kind of wanted him to get his feet wet marketing for a company, but he decided he just wanted to come help us here at the distillery, and
that's so no convincing.
No,
he's like, Dad, can I come back and work at the distillery?
That's cool.
It's doing it right.
When's Cam gonna get a microphone in his hand?
He loves to. He's recorded some stuff at the kitchen studios.
He needs to be in the my girls. They got to do the kids cast.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Oh, he's the mouth of the South. He won't stop.
Our steel, you see back there, it's only one in the world like that. I designed it, and we had Vindem Copper and Brass build it. Them guys had like a 2 or 3 year wait on the steels, and the boys over there, they wanted to do something different. They'd never built a steel like that, and we was lucky. We got ours out in about a year and a half.
So what's the different? What's unique about your steel?
Just we do direct steam injection.
Okay.
And for a lot of the column steels, you know, they heat the plates up.
And this is, so there's no plates?
No, we do direct steam, and we think it makes a lot smoother product than we're hearing.
Don't they say that and this is just technical, that the copper helps to work as somewhat of a filter?
Yeah, the copper takes out some impurities, and we got a copper hat on ours.
Oh, so then it just, you take out the impurities with the copper at the end, but it's more of a pure process with the direct steam. Okay. What's the name of your still?
The Bull.
The Bull.
They used to call my dad the Bull of the Woods around here, so we nicknamed the still after him.
Yeah, you got to have a name for your still. Yeah.
And our thumper, my wife put on it, Born to Shine, so I didn't.
Born to Shine. And so are you running the still constantly? Is it every day, or do you?
Just, you know, we'll make a bunch and we'll bottle all that, and then aging, you know, it takes time. We like running in the winter time more the summer because it's so hot. We try to make enough in the winter to kind of coast through the summer months.
So this is busy time right now.
Yeah.
And how is it just based on what you get? Like, I assume you can get corn all the time, but can you get the apples that you want and the peaches all the
they're
time?
They're seasonal. We just do them when, you know, the peaches come in. We'll ferment them fresh and take all the seeds out. It's a lot of work, hands-on. And then the apples, we get them around October. We use a limber twig apple here. It's a local apple, and
that was just rediscovered as an heirloom apple, right?
And it's the last apple of the season pick, the limber twig. So wait about October before we make that.
And that makes particularly good brandy as well?
Yeah, a lot of the growers tell me it's the only apple that makes a real good cider by itself is the limber twig.
I know we were talking about the different apples Matty B. And he was talking about the different, essentially, varietals, I guess, if you will, of apple, and that most domestic apples are too sweet to make a proper cider. But then when you start going up to Virginia, which we're pretty close to Virginia here, that's where you can actually get more of a good cider apple. And is that because they're drier? Is that the lower sugar content?
Limber twig's a little drier apple, and just a unique flavor. I never tasted apple anything like it. It's got... That's what we think makes the brandy so different and better than a lot of brandies. A lot of the brandies in ABC stores, you see brandy with artificial flavors. Yeah. Ours is just pure apples. We don't put no artificial nothing in it. It's all from the...
And so when you're doing that, you make a mash out of the apples, right?
Yeah. I've got an old-timey grinder. We bring them in and we grind the apples up, and then we let them ferment natural.
Leave the skins on?
Yep, everything.
Just open air fermentation.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah, you wouldn't believe it. In like 2 days, they're already building heat and fermenting, and you can smell the alcohol off of them.
That's what these are? These are the open fermenters right here on this side.
Yeah, the wooden barrels. But we've been doing the apples in the stainless tank.
Okay.
There, because it stays in so long,
and then you extract, pull the juice out of it. You take the juice, or
we put the whole apple and everything in the steel. That's where the steel design I made, like the pot steels would scorch on the bottom because it's so thick, but we can put the chunks of apple and everything, get more flavor out of it.
Okay.
So we pump all that in the steel.
Okay, and it just evaporates at that point, right? Or do you smell some must at the end of it?
Yeah, that starts out real thick, then the steam going in, we're putting direct steam in and it thins it up and gets all the alcohol out.
Before you put the alcohol in, when you're just making the apple mash, and you're saying that's fermenting, how high in alcohol does that get before you actually run it through the still?
We've had it up to around 12-14% alcohol.
So that's like an apple wine. So it's like an apple wine. It's almost like, it's exactly brandy.
Apple, you're making wine. All wine is wine. You distill it, then it's brandy, the grapes and stuff.
Yeah. It's like... Like they make cognac, they make a wine first and then run it through still. I think the ghost of your daddy maybe came back.
The lights just went out in here.
They're on the scene.
He doesn't like you telling the story publicly.
Yeah, he's like, careful about what that liquor, those are family recipes right there. You're giving
it tidy. They used to do that. We done this one event called the Moonshiner and Revenuers Reunion. Had all the old moonshiners on one side and the revenuers on the other. They couldn't hardly get dad to say much.
Wait, you call them the moonshiners and the revenuers?
Yeah.
Like the people who were collecting the money?
Those are the people working for the state.
Oh, right.
The revenuers.
Yeah, the revenuers.
Are coming through, and they're the tax man.
Yeah.
That was the enemy.
Yeah, they put you in prison, sense. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Grandpa, he dodged law for 5 years in Oregon because he knew he was going to be going to prison when they caught him. And when he come back one year for Christmas, they ended up catching him. And he went over here to get tried, and he got a day in prison for every day he dodged the law. He got 5 years. But he had been called two or three times before.
Is that the picture in the front when you walk in?
Yeah, the mugshot.
That's your grandfather?
Yeah, that's Willie Simon.
Yeah, now I guess they call him the ALE, right? That's the guys walking around with the guns on their belts.
Yeah, you got ALE, ABC.
ABC.
Yeah.
They got a few different services to
make sure that you got all your paper in order.
Yeah. So but no offense to the ALE and ABC, but clearly we're not doing their job very well for the fact that this stuff is still happening, like. It's current. Like there's still some guys making stuff, and I guess that's why they exist, because they got to make sure that's why the ALE exists, because clearly...
Yeah, there'll probably somebody always be making, you know, moonshine or brandy.
I'm not asking you to tell us, but I'm just saying, I bet there are a lot of guys making moonshine...
Still.
Illegally.
Better illegally.
Around here that we just don't know about, or do know about.
And, that has to still play into like that, because old wounds don't heal easy, you know, of dealing with the government, and especially with the way that our ABC boards work in North Carolina and the frustrations there. Are you guys relatively well represented in the ABC stores?
Yeah, they've been real open to us. You know, this liquor's been illegal for years, and we brought it to the mainstream.
Yeah, and now they're like, now you can make money off it.
Yeah, we're paying all that tax money back now. Where my dad and grandpa run it illegal, so
yeah, they're happy.
Yeah, they're happy that we're, you know, on board, and
right,
everybody can get some of it now. It ain't limited.
And you came in at a good time, because obviously now you can sell more out of your tasting room.
Yeah.
You can have a bar in your tasting room, so you can build revenue that way. And
you don't have limitations as to how many units you can sell here at the distillery, whereas thanks to the passing of SB 290 last year, and so that changed the game a lot. I have to imagine that's probably why you decided to expand and turn your distillery into a more interactive place to be.
Yeah, that's for sure. When we started, it was zero. You know, you couldn't sell nothing. Then it got up to five. Now it's unlimited. We can sell just like an ABC store. So.
I got to think, though, that you, your family, just like when you saw those laws, you're like, oh, that's cute. Like, oh, really? We can't sell more than five in a year? Oh, we can't sell more than one? That's cute.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I'm going to go do what I want. So now the law is just kind of updated to your business practices legally now. So.
Yeah, the bar, too, we opened it because we want to show people how to drink our product. You know, their cinnamon liqueur whiskey or aged whiskeys or moonshines, where my wife can do like different mixed drinks and show people how to.
You are making me very thirsty.
Yeah, I'm ready to go taste some of this product.
We need to try some of this
whiskey. We can fix you up, that's for sure.
Let's do it.
But first, a word from our sponsors. I'm talking about Triangle Wine Company, purveyors of fine wine and craft beer. The Triangle Wine Company offers local delivery, in-store pickup, curbside service, wine shipping, and keg rental. With locations in Morrisville, Cary, Holly Springs, Southern Pine, and soon to be Raleigh, they are here to service the community for all of your beverage needs. And be sure to use the NCFB promo code to receive a nice discount when placing your orders. Visit TriangleWineCo.com or call them at 1-800-919-7518. This episode is also brought to you by Boss Coffee USA, Japan's number one coffee brand, coming to you here in North Carolina, and technically all over the Americas, because it's available on Amazon.com. Coming in three flavors, black, vanilla, and cafe au lait, Boss Coffee is flash brewed, which means it's brewed hot and then chilled fast for optimal flavor. Make sure that when you are purchasing your Boss Coffee on Amazon, you use our promo code, which is NCFBPODCAST. You will receive 10% off your purchase because we like you a lot. So thank you for listening. Thank you for enjoying Boss Coffee. And now back to the show.
All right. Well, we've got apple and peach brandy.
Yeah.
This is Grandpa's recipe. So did Brian tell you about the history, the grandpa, the reverend?
Yes. Okay. And also of famous heirloom apple that you make these.
With limber twig apples.
Limber twig,
yeah. Yeah, that's a very old apple. It's rare. We can only find it in the brushies. So it's the last apple picked off the tree. So that's what we're waiting on now, is for the apple to be brought down for him to make more apple brandy.
Oh, so they haven't even been picked this season.
It's probably starting to be picked because they have to get a real good frost on it.
Okay.
So it should should be picking that one.
Yeah, we're in December.
And yeah, so it should
just
be
just now picking
the limber twig.
Wow. Okay, so that does come up pretty late in the season.
Yeah, the limber twig does.
Yeah.
So he'll get the limber twig. He brings them down. He grinds them up. They'll ferment for several months in a barrel back there. He doesn't add anything to it. And then when that's ready, he'll run it through the still and get our brandy. He doesn't age the brandy or put it in a barrel. He did that one time. He feels like that takes some of the flavor out of the brandy. Hmm. So the brandy's 86 proof. It does have some heat to it.
Mm-hmm.
I do tell people, I have a lot of people coming in thinking that brandy is a wine because it's made from fruit. And that's not the case. This is not wine. So I'll pour you a sample of that.
Please do.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
We are fans of apple brandy.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So when you do a tasting, how do you normally line everything up?
Normally, I start with the brandy, just like I'm going here. So we'll do all the brandies, then the moonshine, the 101s, then the pie, which is 70, and then the whiskey. I end with the whiskey.
I might have said before, but you know, I used to be a sommelier at David Boulay in New York.
And you mentioned it once or 10 times.
To you. One thing that he was known for doing is he would put in the entrance, the whole foyer when you walk into the restaurant, would be shelves of apples, and they would just sit out, and somebody would be tasked with replacing them every now and then. But it just made such for a walk-in fragrant experience. Oh, and that smell right there brings me right back to walking into Boulay.
You know, that's funny you say that, because normally when we are making the brandy, and he will have cases or boxes of apples brought up front, and so when you come in, they're sitting there, and you can have an apple. You take an apple, you eat it. There's been times, Brian, he will give away bags of apples when you come in.
Okay.
So he will bring the apples up also,
yeah,
and have them here for
smell
people.
Great there.
Oh yeah. Mm.
That is delicious.
Yeah.
Now, okay, let's talk, because I'm a bartender by trade.
Okay.
I love making drinks. So I'm the versatility of this brandy, being that it is 43% alcohol. So I mean, it is it's your base spirit in a cocktail. It's not like a liqueur to add to something. What do you like to do cocktail wise?
The main thing I like to do with the brandy is sangria.
Oh,
make
yeah.
a sangria with
That's
it.
That's a great idea.
Other than that, I just like it chilled, serving straight.
Yeah.
But sangria is my top one with my brandy.
Can you tell us a little of your style? How do you make your sangria?
Well, you know, I just pour that in. I put my fruit in, you know, put good wine or whatever I'm putting with it in.
You're putting apples and...
I put apples. I'll put oranges. I'll put strawberries. I just, you know, whatever I'm in the mood for
sure.
at
okay.
that time is what goes in.
Okay.
So, it's mainly apple. Well, I've had a lot of apple, but I like to put the color in there too. So, you know, sangria, I love seeing all that color in there. But I'll do a red wine with this one.
Yeah.
But I don't have like a particular favorite one. I do try to use a lot of local wine. So, you know, the Raffaldini, all that, you know, I'll use those in here.
Cool. Actually, I bet doing a, take that Vermentino that we had, the Italian Vermentino, a white wine, with apple brandy and make it a white sangria would probably be delicious.
That would be good. Yeah.
I could see that working well.
I mean, I could see it well in all applications of sangria. And, but I mean, that's something that I would sip, and I will be sipping.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Brandy, like I said, you know, the sangria is my top one, but just chilled sipping is probably the top.
But Max, you've done Fair Game, which is a distillery not too far from the Raleigh area where we live.
Pittsburgh, yeah.
Yeah, in Pittsburgh. Yeah. You used to make a cocktail at Y Hill with that, no? Or at, was it like a Manhattan with the apple brandy?
Oh, so actually, yeah, we did that, but I was using Copper and Kings coming out of Louisville.
Okay.
Which is also pretty damn good brandy in its own right. But we would do a essentially a sidecar, you know, that's like a sidecar for all intents and purposes is a brandy margarita, really.
Okay.
I mean, you take in fresh lime, maybe fresh lemon or orange, you could do all that, get some sort of liqueur to put with it, you know, like a Cointreau or even triple sec if you in a pinch, and then use the and just put it all together, shake it. I mean, you can serve it with like a sugared rim if you want, or you know, do something a little different, but it's delicious. I mean,
I'll have to try that.
Yeah. Which basically, you know, that's the same thing. If you put rum in it, it's a daiquiri.
Yeah.
It's all the same thing. It's the same cocktail. Because a margarita is the perfect cocktail. Mm-hmm. It is like the perfect amount of sweet sugar and base. Yeah.
I love margarita. So I'll use my clear to make my margarita, and I do slushies. So out of it also.
There you go.
Yeah. But we got peach brandy here.
Yes, please. Let's try that. And this again, yeah, this is 43% alcohol by volume as well. And these are local peaches as well?
Yes, these were from the Brushies also. That's where we get the apples, is from the Brushies.
Ooh.
Now, see, I like the peach. I feel like I can taste more of the peach.
The peach definitely comes out.
Mm-hmm.
It is stronger.
That is peachy.
Wow.
But delicious.
And you can tell it is the true expression of peach. It doesn't taste like a syrup or a like that's just fresh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh man.
And it's clean. I mean, obviously. So this goes through the same still that the Shine goes through.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, the still back there, he can do all of his liquor, the brandy, the whiskey, the moonshine. It's set up to do it all.
Well, His proprietary still design is working.
Yeah.
Because it's such a clean, flavored spirit. It's really well done.
I brag on Brian quite a bit. He's
not
a very...
Not in front of him, but...
Not in front of him. Right. Yeah. I will not brag on him.
Yeah.
But Brian is a very... he's very intelligent. Mm-hmm. He's very good at what he does. So I tell him, you know, there's a reason he's called a master distiller. And I feel like it comes through on his liquor.
Yeah.
So... He's a perfectionist too. Nothing goes out unless, you know, he doesn't rush anything through. Mm-hmm. He will take his time. Yeah, I'll have a date. It's going out on this date, and if it's not ready, it won't go out. He'll push it back. So, okay. So we got the Straight White Lightning. This is 101 proof. Now this is Clay, his daddy's recipe. You know, Clay was uncatchable. The revenuers never caught him in a car. I love Clay. Clay was one of the best men I ever have known in my life.
Wow.
He was a great man. And I do tear up when I talk about Clay. So, wish he was here to see this. So this is...
And he just passed in 14, is that right?
Yes.
I said just. I mean, it was 6 years ago.
Yeah, just passed. But, yeah. But he's not been gone too long.
Yeah.
No. I think he would have just, this would have been just great. I think he would have had a hoot up here with this. So.
A lot of stories to tell about that.
He had a lot of stories.
And this is 100% corn?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And 101 proof. Woo! Oh, wow.
That's a good shot.
That's really good. I mean, it's obviously, I mean, it's hot, but... It's smooth, like you definitely want to taste the alcohol, but it doesn't have that bitter, you know, or just, I don't know, like a chemical kind of flavor. This is just pure, clean.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. That's delicious.
Been able to, like I said, I mean, really, it comes through when he was, he was telling us the whole process of the coals and the cooling and how that it's pure steam creates better flavor, and now it makes sense because then you use the copper to strip it of all the impurities and the bad, harsh tasting ethers that you don't want, and it's perfect.
Yeah, this is awesome.
I'm clear, and I tell people when I'm doing tasting, because I'll tell them the proof, 101. A lot of people, you know, will go, don't shy away from this 101 straight, because it's very smooth for 101. If you want to taste moonshine, that's what you want to go for.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow.
And like I said, that makes the best margarita. Anything that I'll do, I could use vodka or tequila with, I can use this in.
Sure.
Yeah.
So I really like doing that.
Yeah, I mean, without, like, I guess what, the real, like, the difference between, say, this and vodka, per se, is just the fact that it's being used, it's 100% corn. Is that, like, what really qualifies the difference? Because I would always say with whiskey, it's like, well, it's because it's been aged in barrel, and, you know, you're taking this, so in effect, I mean, what is the difference, really?
I think vodka, historically, has been column distilled, and typically is, like, double or triple distilled, so... You have the sort of, the column still strips a lot of the flavors out.
Right. And yeah, that's true. Because technically there are, it's not the mash bill because like Tito's is 100% corn. So, right, it's probably, because this is a one-time distillation and then you're not.
We're not running it back through.
Yeah, you're not running it back through.
You're doing the steam injection as opposed to a column still.
Because there's rules about whiskey. Well, does the TTB label this whiskey, or it's just called sour mash moonshine?
This, I believe, does not have its own category like whiskey, vodka. This is, I believe, they put this under a whiskey bill. I'm pretty sure. But it's not labeled whiskey.
Right. But because to be American whiskey, I think it's you have to pull it off at 130 proof, or maybe that's bourbon. Like, it has to be above a certain proof when it comes off the still. I think it's 130. So... That's the other thing.
Is how hot it gets.
Yeah,
like how hot
vodka,
they go.
You don't, because you proof it down. You probably also cut vodka with water too.
Strawberry. Now strawberry, the clear is the base for all the moonshine. So when we bring this down, then we just go to do strawberry. He will run it through, get the clear, put it in the bottle, and then add the strawberries to it.
In the bottle, not
in the bottle.
Okay.
Yeah, not in
the... So that's a lot of work you got to do to each bottle versus doing it in just a big barrel or something like that.
And then they'll sit. He likes for it to sit with the fruit in it about 2 weeks and get that color and that flavor into the liquor. So you can eat the fruit that's in this jar, but I tell people, and I have my sign up over the door there, it says respect the fruit. Don't eat much. You will have a good time. You won't remember it.
Right. The fruit is dangerous.
That fruit is way dangerous than that liquor that's in there.
Yeah, it is kind of interesting how the swap, right? Because these once bright red cherries are now completely white strawberries. These bright red strawberries are now completely white, but then obviously all of its color was just lended into the liquor, and now the liquor is like a nice pink, pale, like blush, if you will.
Yeah.
Is there a shelf life on these?
Forever.
Okay.
They will last. Yeah, they're.
It's preserving
them. Yeah.
It's kind of like grappa.
Yeah.
Like a fruited.
Whoa. Okay, because I'm no jive, right? I had low expectations for this. Just because I'm like, well, what's it going to be? Like, you're just putting some fruit in there. It can't be good.
Yeah.
I'm totally wrong, and I'm not just blowing smoke. This is legit. Like, this, the flavor is so pure of strawberry, but then it packs a real big punch because it is moonshine.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is fantastic. I could get down with this. I could make some serious cocktails with this.
Yeah. What, are there strawberries local as well?
No, he does individually quick frozen. So I don't have like a huge strawberry place around locally that I can get them from. He'll order those, and the cherries he'll order those also.
Really short season here too, I think, for strawberries and cherries.
Yeah.
If we had somebody local to do it, that'd be great, because we try to do as local as possible with everything.
That's delicious.
I mean, I would like to just make an old fashioned with this. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it's already got that natural berry flavor. I mean, I'm sure we're gonna get to the cherry. I'll probably say the same thing when I get there. But this is a nice flip on a basic old fashioned. You throw some bitters in there, a little orange peel extraction.
Lauren, just let it back.
I know. I'm sort of saying, just come back here and let me sit over there. That would be awesome.
Max making cocktails.
Sure.
I know, that would be great.
With your product.
Were you there the day that when we went Thanksgiving for the Cafe Del Rey, when I jumped behind the bar at the Saints and Sinners bar and I made all the cocktails for everybody? Were you still working there?
No.
Or maybe you hadn't worked there yet.
I think I had just left.
Yeah. But, like, we were open on Thanksgiving. No, it was the day before Thanksgiving, which is always, like, the biggest drinking night of the year.
Uh-huh.
And, The whole team, we all worked really hard, and I told the owners, I'd like to take the team out, say thank you, because we're all going to be working Thanksgiving, we're open, we're not going to be around our families, can I take them all and buy them around at a bar? And they were like, that's fine, take some petty cash. I took $300 out to, like, just buy around for 30 people or so. And it's so funny, like, talking about this now in current society, like, there's no way you could do that. Like, wait, the boss is going to go take money from petty cash and go buy alcohol for all of his team members? But back then, it's like, yeah, that was just a nice thing. And I went to a local bar that was a friend of mine. He was a Darian Daniel was spinning that night. He's a DJ. We went to Saints and Sinners in Venice, and the bartender was getting crushed. The bar was slammed, and he was by himself. Mm-hmm. And I knew my team wanted to drink, and we were not going to get served in an appropriate amount of time. So I went to the bartender. I'm dressed in my suit, and I go, hey, man, I'm going to be real honest with you. We're thirsty, and you ain't going to be able to get to us in time. I am a bartender. I know how to do this. Let me get behind your bar and help you out. He's like, what? Whatever. I'm like, I'm not messing around. Like, seriously, I don't want any money. I just want to get these guys served. And he's like, what? I'm like, and all my buddies are out there like, he can do it. Yeah, it's fine. So he's like, I guess. And then I looked up at my DJ buddy, and he's like, yeah. He changed the music, put a little Wolf Mother on, blasted real loud. The And I took off my jacket, undid the tie, went behind the bar, and just started making drinks. And I worked from, like, 11 o'clock at night, and I closed the place at 2 a.m.
Oh, wow.
We brought in maybe $600 in tips, let's say. And even at the end, I was like, you know, you don't have to give me any money. He's like, I feel like I need to, though. And I'm like, well, if you want to. And then I got mad because he gave me $30.
And give me money.
If we're going to split this bounty, I mean, you know, maybe a bill. Like, give me a hundy or something. But, yeah. Like,
300 in petty cash at his place.
Yeah, I couldn't even fill up my gas tank with the money he gave me. But, no. It was fun, though. And, I mean, it was kind of cool. It was like, I was working for my team, and that felt good. It was like, yeah, I'm getting my team drunk.
Well, anytime you undress behind this bar, you come right on.
Yeah, all right.
You can come right on and do it.
There you go, Max.
All right, I'm not doing that right now.
Max guest bartending in Wilkesboro Saturday night.
Yeah. That's right. That is the...
Actually, if Max was here, it's star tending.
Yeah. Come on, celeb-tender. That is the unfortunate thing, is that if you do tell people, like, at a party or something, you know how to make drinks, then it's like, guess what you're doing for the next 2 hours.
Right, yeah.
All right, the cherry. I am... I mean, cherry is like everything. It's it's bold. It's like the strawberry is delicate and nice. Mm-hmm. The strawberry is beautiful and like, and it makes so much sense. I mean, like, you know, you put the cherry brandies and stuff like that. So cherry in the moonshine, it's magnificent.
Thank you.
This is fantastic. I mean, this is like a ready-made cocktail. Mm-hmm. You don't really need to do anything to this.
Put a cherry on top.
And the only thing that people mainly do with a cherry is they may put it in a Coke. I call that a Coke burner. Put it in a Coke.
That would be delicious. Yeah. That would be fantastic. Maybe if you want to be a little more North Carolina, put cheer wine.
Cheer wine. That's what I was going to say, cheer wine.
Yeah.
But, you know, the main thing would be...
Yeah, I wonder what the rule is. I don't know this, but, you know, in bartending lore, you don't really shake brown liquors. You stir them. This is a clear liquor, and even, I mean, obviously the ones that are fruited have a tint to them, but that's not because of oak barrel aging or whatever. So I wonder if you could shake moonshine, if it's proper to, would you, when you're making your margaritas at all, you shake them up?
Shake it.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I don't think that...
Yeah, you're using it as an application, like more like a canvas and not like a vodka or tequila, like you said.
Yeah.
What type of cherries are those?
Those are bean cherries.
Okay.
Yeah.
Pretty short.
And same thing, there's nothing added. It's just the cherries.
Just the cherries.
And they sit in for about like 2 weeks.
It's about 2 weeks, yeah. And when we're putting them in back there, it's just beautiful because you got the clear liquor, then the bright red cherry and the bright red strawberry, and you put them in, and it's just, they're sitting there in it. And then you can all of a sudden start seeing, it starts immediately, the color starts coming out. But it's beautiful. I told Ronnie, if there was any way we could get that flavor but keep that berry, it's just... Them colors are just beautiful when it first puts in. But it's fun to watch it because you'll see the color start dripping out of the berry. And that's just really cool.
Alcohol is the fastest way to infuse anything. Like, I mean, you can make, you know, cold brew by putting cold water and coffee in, and you take it overnight, and then in the morning, it's good. You know, it's fine. But you can put coffee in a bottle of Everclear, which I did recently, and it's like 30 seconds later, you have coffee-flavored moonshine or coffee-flavored Everclear. Like, it happens instantaneously. It's crazy how fast it works.
Okay, now we're going to get to apple pie.
I mean, this makes so much sense that you have a bar here. Like, these, like I said, they're almost ready-made cocktails because of the flavor profile, but then you, on top of it, then enhance it by mixing some things in here. Like, I really would have a field day. Maybe we got to do something, Matt. Maybe a little pop-up bar here sometime. Mm-hmm. The NCFM bar at the Call Family Distillery. Make some cool drinks. Like,
that would be awesome. I would love it.
That would be really fun.
Yeah.
How does it work, though? Do you have a full liquor license, and would you be able to bring in other liquors?
Yes.
You know, like, you can buy Campari or whatever. And
when I get my license, and I believe I have been approved, I'm just waiting for them to come in, I would be able to do a full bar. So I can go to the liquor store and buy all the liquors. I'll have beer, wine, stuff here for sale also. So
what's your program going to look like? I mean, are you going to, it sounds like you're making a margarita.
I'll be making, I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to have like a menu once a month. This is what I'm serving. Then I'm going to have something on special. And then I'm going to flip it every month, kind of getting, you know, different ones with my liquor. And then I'll be doing regular drinks also. Mm-hmm. If somebody, you know, wants Blue Jack motorcycle. Or, yeah, what, you know, I'm going to have all
of
that.
Although if they want a Jack and Coke, like, really, let's just get a... Yeah.
Don't you dare. Yeah, you can't have Jack Daniels in here, right? You're like, we made Jack Daniels.
You know, I'm gonna leave that up to Brian. Yeah. I'm going to leave that up to him and let
Let's omit the Jack Daniels here. Like, you serve that purpose.
Yeah.
It's just like at the brewery that I was at for a while, we make our own beer, so therefore we don't sell other people's beer.
Yeah.
Like, you can't get a Bud Light at this place. No, we make beer. You're going to drink our beer. Yeah. Okay, so the apple pie. First question is, what's the difference between the apple brandy and the apple pie? I mean, I kind of know, but please tell us.
The apple brandy is made from apples. Mm-hmm. That's been ground up. The apple pie base is the clear grain moonshine. And then we add the cinnamon stick to it, so it gives it that cinnamon flavor to it. But the brandy's made from the fruit.
There's no apples in there? It's just the cinnamon stick?
Just the cinnamon stick in that one.
Man. For all you, we're going to get to the cinnamon liqueur too, but I was going to say, for all you, I'm going to admonish them a little bit, but for all you morons that drink Fireball, respect yourself and get this instead. Like, and I imagine that the Forbidden Fire is probably a little bit more in the Fireball category.
Yes.
But this scratches that itch as well. This is like, it's so much more evolved. It's got a bigger, complex flavor profile. It's sweet. It's a little spicy. I don't know.
I think you're about to jump the gun.
I know, because the next one's going to be even more. That's going to be the spicier one. Yeah. That's going to be the cinnamon one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You jumped the shark.
I jumped it. Just like Fonzie.
The Forbidden Fire one that's coming is my personal favorite.
Okay. Now, are you a Fireball fan? And Max just insulted you.
You know, I was. Okay. I'm not.
Now you're a Forbidden Fire.
I am Forbidden Fire all the way.
I just don't. I don't like Fireball because it tastes artificial.
It tastes syrupy.
Yeah.
So this one doesn't. And so, you know, Brian, he knocked it out of the park, in my opinion, with this one.
So what's the process here?
Woo!
That's the rye whiskey.
Well, so you make a rye whiskey here as well. Okay. Mm. And then, same thing, you're putting cinnamon in the distillery, in the distillation?
The difference with this one is like all of these are natural. There's no artificial flavors added to these.
Right.
This one, he adds a natural cinnamon flavor to it to get that red hot taste to it.
Yeah.
And then the rye whiskey.
Yeah, I did jump the gun. This is the Fireball competitor, I would say, but this is just straight pure cinnamon and spice. This is delicious. Yeah. 70 proof, so it's a little lower than, say, some of the others, because everything else is...
This one's the apple pie is 70.
Okay.
So the rest are 101 and 86.
Mm-hmm. Do you cut the apple pie one down then with water? Or?
Yeah, so it will start out with this, and then he cuts that one down to make it 70.
And so do you bottle a rye whiskey as well, or?
He has a barrel. He's getting ready to release a barrel-aged whiskey.
Okay.
It's a four-year-aged whiskey. Be
a
ready.
Rye whiskey?
It'll be ready, I believe he said Christmas Day.
And oh,
he's got he's got two new flavors of whiskey coming out. Also, a coffee liqueur and a peach whiskey. And then his barrel aged will be out.
I know you said he doesn't rush anything, but come on. We're here. It's just a couple weeks away. Let's get that rye whiskey.
We just
see
a sample? Can't sample?
Is he going
It's
back?
Not time.
What, do you want a big cup? Or?
I think you convinced him.
What kind of cup do you want?
Just a little.
You want like a sample? Or one of these?
I pulled a little bit out of my barrel.
Oh, geez. All right.
Thank you, Brian.
Yeah.
Yeah, anytime that Brian, if he's here and he steps back to his office,
look out.
You're getting ready to get a treat.
So is that made from the same rye whiskey and then it's just flavored with a cinnamon, a natural cinnamon flavor? Okay.
So I kind of asked the same of your son, I take it. That's, you all have been married for how long now?
We've been married 23 years.
So, you guys are legitimate now.
Mm-hmm.
But you were not born a call. You married in. Right. You chose to marry into. You chose the dangerous life. Like, you chose to jump into this life of bootleggers and all.
Yeah.
So, like, if anything, like, he had no choice, right? Like he was born into it. Mm-hmm. But I almost say, like, you're even the more dangerous person because you chose, you said, yeah, I want to marry into a bootlegging family. I want this life. What does it feel like now that it's all fully legitimate?
You know, I love it. I honestly fell in love with Brian the moment I saw him. I did. So.
Well, we are now, too, because this whiskey.
I love it. I love what we do. I love our life that we've created. I love what they did before. And, you know, they did it to survive. So
you love the man and everything about him.
I do.
Thank
I do.
You, sir. That's 118 right out of the barrel.
It's 118 proof right out of the barrel.
Not to gloss over it's a beautiful thing that you do. But yeah, we do have to also
love. Pause. Let's get back to the ride.
That's
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So Brian was nice enough to pull out the little barrel sample of 118 proof rye. Is it going to be bottled at 118?
No, we're 86 proof.
Okay, 86.
So this is cask strength, as it's called, essentially.
Yep. I got some friends want me to do cask
strength with you.
Yeah,
that's all the rage these days.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That's tremendous. So that was in barrel for 4 years, yeah. You said?
Well, that sample was pulled about 3 years and 7 months.
Okay. Who's counting?
The 17th of a 4 year.
Oh, I told him the 25th. I was wrong.
So we're waiting on labels, getting all that done.
Oh, cool. And what will it be called?
It'll be the Reverend Sour Mash Whiskey.
The Reverend Sour Mash Whiskey.
Filtered through sugar maple.
Oh, right. That's the sugar maple we were talking about. Yeah.
That's not this.
Yeah.
That is this.
Yeah.
But this is all rye, no?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, no, it ain't. It's corn, rye, and barley.
Barley. Oh, like, uh-huh. So like a classic.
Laura, she says rye. But
yeah, I say rye whiskey.
You know.
What, do you know the percentages of hand?
Yeah.
Can you tell us? Or is that a
triple? Keep that.
A secret?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because the flavor is. Yeah,
can you tell us, though, is there more corn or more rye? Or?
That's, he would be telling you too much, man.
Whiskey, yeah. You know, you got to be 51%.
To be bourbon.
You'd be whiskey or bourbon, 51%. But ours, we got a pretty high rye yield in there.
Okay.
This is awesome.
Yeah.
It really is fantastic.
This is, I'm a rye drinker myself. Mm-hmm. Like, that's my go-to. I mean, with like.
What do you think? Is that smooth for rye?
Oh, that's fantastic.
The steam makes it smoother, I think, than a lot of.
You know, I was saying that earlier about your, the whole idea for your still makes so much sense, especially when you taste the apple brandy and the peach brandy. Yep. Because, like, wow.
I'm glad I know more about this. I've seen these bottles on the shelves when I go to the ABC store, and I was always just like curious, but then a little cynical, or like a skeptical, I should say. I was like, is that going to be good? I don't know. But you have made me a believer. I will say, like, seeing the fruit in the bottle it's cool. But it also kind of gives you like this intention of like, well, that's just going to be fruity or so.
Yeah.
And it really isn't that. I mean, it's just, it has a flavor, but it's pretty, it's refined. It's a really good flavor.
I think also the big difference there, I mean, call it craft or call it what you will, but the fact that they're individually fruiting each bottle versus putting tons of fruit in a barrel. For all you out there, whenever you come to Wilkesboro, stop by Call Family Distillery and you will drink very merrily.
Hey, before we get out of here, I want to speak to you about Proof Alcohol Ice Cream. That's right, think differently about your dessert, because now in a new year, they brought back an old favorite. I'm talking about their bourbon chocolate cherry ice cream. First released last year, they brought it back again for the second time because it's so delicious. Made daily in Columbia, South Carolina, look for the red pints and coolers at Lowe's Foods, Total Wine, Harris Teeter, and of course, Triangle Wine Company. Find out more information, go to ProofAlcoholIceCream.com or visit any of their 200 retail locations across the Carolinas and Florida.
Thanks for listening to the NCF&B Podcast. And if you've stuck with us this long, review us on iTunes and remember, 5 stars are encouraged.